Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy Friday. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. For one thing, it is Friday. But hey, we got some very interesting stuff to talk about this evening.
You know, I think it could be the fact that we do other geek, but we seem to put the weirdest shows on Friday. Am I right? Generally, if there's a weird subject,
we kind of let it all hang out on Friday. We really do.
You know, we like this kind of Friday show. So all week we've been doing surprising news and the crazy questions that these surprising news stories raise, and tonight we're doing some truly surprising news stories, and the crazy questions they raise have to do with puzzling signals from outer space and what I'm going to call self-driving stars. By the way, I invented that phrase, okay?
If you ever hear trademarked.
Yeah, exactly. Here it is, the World Transformed, okay, show before Halloween, 2016, Phil said self-driving stars. I challenge anyone to have said it earlier. Thank you. All right, so we got that out of the way. So, yeah, we got these two. You know, bizarre stories here. It's like, okay, there's one that says there's 234 alien civilizations possibly out there trying to communicate with each other or with us or with somebody. And that's not even the weirdest one, right? I mean, that is the second weirdest of the two stories. So I guess we'll work our way up to the weirder of the two, right? and start with, it's either that stars are really weird and don't work the way we thought, or there are 234 aliens. The headline says, trying to contact us. I'm sorry, headline writer. No, there's no particular reason to believe they're trying to contact us. But there is a certain amount of reason. There's a certain argument to be made that these stars are producing signals, producing a signature that is hard to account for any way other than intelligent life. Right? That's the basic thesis here. What do you think, Stephen? The big argument that's been raised around this story is, well, okay, here's what you have. You have this cosmologist who first wrote a paper and said, if stars, exhibit this kind of behavior, then there could be aliens. And then he goes and looks at the data and says, hey, they do, therefore there's aliens. And, you know, some people are highly, you know, skeptical of that. They're like, well, you know, maybe he had a good idea that they were going to exhibit that behavior. And so, you know, the whole thing is just kind of self-perpetuating, you know, backs himself up. But I'm going to take him at his word, you know, that he really thought those were good things and that he subsequently really discovered that. We'll assume for purposes of this program that part of it's legit, okay? Because otherwise the show's no fun. We'd spend the whole time talking about what's going on in that guy's head. But assuming that he really was just honestly out looking for things that would mark intelligent life, and then, boom, these
proceeds
showed
to
up.
Find it. Yeah.
Yeah. Here are the crazy questions that arise from this. The first one is, you know, they found 234 stars that fit the signature. Now, out of the galaxy, that is not very many stars. And even out of the number that they've looked at, it's not very many stars. But I got to say that 234 is quite a few. If we're talking about, you know, technical civilizations, and if
it's more than 50.
Yeah, it's more than 50. Okay. We've crossed that threshold. So, you know, something significant, right? But what if tech civilizations are really not all that rare, right? What if there's a few thousand of them in the galaxy, you know, tens of thousands of them in the galaxy? I mean, I'm just saying, what if? I'm throwing that unbelievably ridiculous open-ended question to you, Stephen. What if there's, you know, tech civilizations are not so rare? What does that imply?
Well, I think that it would imply that, you know, Fermi's paradox would seem to indicate if there are, you know, if intelligent life is not all that rare, then and the question comes back, well, why haven't they come here? You know, it could imply a couple of things. Number one, maybe it's hard to cross the galaxy. You know, I mean, maybe interstellar travel is just so difficult that even very advanced civilizations just find that, you know, it's not really all that feasible. Or, and I think that this may be a little more likely, we're just very early to the party.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's quite possible that I was having a discussion with my oldest son Timothy, and he had read an article, and I need to pull this article. It talked about the percentage of rocky planets in the universe. We're at the very beginning of the history of rocky planets
right.
in our universe. If that's the case, then it's quite possible that we're early to the party, and that, you know, we're, you know, counting us as 235 here in the local area.
Okay, but I'm sorry, dude. I'm calling you on this. You are chickening from the question. Okay.
Okay.
I'm not asking you some Fermi paradox. Why isn't anybody else there? I'm saying, what if there's a bunch of them out there? Okay, that's the, you know, that's
yeah. I was just trying. You know, the implication is, well, why aren't they here? You know, if there's a bunch out there, I'm saying, you know, hey, I think we're early. I think we're one of the first. And
I'm
saying
we are freaking surrounded by alien civilizations, and I think it's time to get worried, okay? That's my point.
Well,
there's a lot more of them out there.
Which are you watching, E.T. or something a little scarier? You know, I mean, what movies do you prefer?
Well, in fact, that's my next crazy question. It's not listed. You know, what if it's not a whole bunch of tech civilizations? What if it's just one, right? What if they're all one group? You know, there are 234 stars that we found so far, and we'll find that they're showing up at
they're
a lot
of United
more
Federation of Planets or something.
Or,
yeah.
Well, which would be great, or they're the Borg, right? Which would be Ooh. Not so awesome. But
yeah.
You know, what if it's this? Wow, that's a downer. Okay, but that's what I'm thinking. What if it's this? You know, parasite-like civilization that's just spreading, you know, across the. It's not like Independence Day. They're not destroying, you know. It's more like the Borg, right? They're leaving their mark everywhere they go, and you see them spreading across the galaxy. Well, that would be a bummer for sure. But there's another possibility that we can get into as we look at the next story, which is encapsulated in kind of two phrasings I've got here of this second question. What if these signals are coming from the stars themselves? What if the signals are coming from exotic life forms living inside the stars? What do you think, Stephen? Any chance that we've been looking at planets, we've been looking at rocky planets because we think everybody else is a rocky planet. What if the big money is on, you know, plasma beings living inside of stars? You know, beings that we can barely even imagine.
That's so far beyond my imagination, Phil. It's hard for me to comment on that. I don't know. I've read a couple science fiction stories about life forms living in the atmosphere of gas giants.
Right.
That's about as close to what you're talking about as I've even. You know, imagined before based on a sci-fi. Never even thought about the possibility of a star being the seat of intelligence.
If intelligent beings were living somehow inside of stars, or if stars themselves were somehow intelligent, then it would really flip the old, you know, who's late to the party, who's early to the party, because rocky planets would just be this little odd other way of getting into intelligence in the universe, because stars would have been doing it you know, for long before we were here, right? And there's a lot more stars, right, than there are rocky planets. So it would flip both of those. But you're right, that's a pretty wacky question. That is a pretty out there kind of a thing to ask, because there's no good reason to believe there's any intelligence inside of stars. unless you read our second story tonight, right? Which is
self-driving stars.
The rockets. Thank you. The rocket scientists who woke the stars. Okay, so we've got a physicist studying the motions of stars, and he says, okay, the forces that we would normally associate with how stars move don't really account for what stars are doing. They seem to be kind of randomly moving around. It looks to me like they're thinking about what they're doing and they're deciding where to go. I mean, he doesn't say it in quite those words, but that's essentially his point, is it not?
Yeah, yeah. And so it's just nothing to account for based on our current understanding for how and why these stars are moving the way they are.
Right. Right.
You know, it's really odd. You know, it could be, Phil, that some sufficiently advanced technology is moving these stars without it having to be something in the star itself, perhaps.
Right. Right. There could be intelligence doing it, but it's not the star. Yeah.
I mean, what better way to travel the galaxy than to just move your star around willy-nilly if you're able to do that? That would be pretty great, wouldn't it?
All so, the comforts of home, because you're at
yeah,
home.
Yeah.
You're orbiting your stars.
This is the Winnebago model of exploring the galaxy, right? Take your home with you.
Exactly.
It would be pretty great.
So the idea touches on this notion that we've talked about a few times on the show, this idea of panpsychism, the idea that consciousness is this kind of separate force of nature that actually occurs everywhere in nature, and that we are just particularly, what's the word I'm looking for, sophisticated processors of, but that there might be other processors of it, including other other evolved beings like ourselves, but maybe other structures, right, could be the seat of consciousness. And the idea that stars could be these, entities with an inner life, there's something going on inside. They're thinking. They've got, they've got motivations. They've got hopes and fears and plans and maybe relationships with other stars, and they go places. Okay, on the one hand, that is just about as crazy an idea as you can imagine, right? I mean, does it for an idea suggested by a serious scientist, does it get much more bonkers than that? I guess that's the way of putting that. What do you think?
Yeah, that's about as crazy as it gets. With respect to a friend of the show, Jim, you'd have to go to Jim Elvidge to get something that's any crazier than that.
He'd be a good guy to ask that question, right? Hey Jim, here's one. What's crazier than this? No, but I mean that, like, not that some guy with a tinfoil hat says, but that, like, a scientist says, right? That's what Jim could tell us, because I think this is right up there. But if it's true, then you face this really outrageous, crazy question. Is it possible that stars are actually the primary intelligence in the universe? And a more disturbing question, since we only see a few of them doing this, and, going back to the previous story, since only a few of them have that signature sending those signals around, not that there's any reason necessarily to believe there's a connection between those two, but I'm just supposing, right? Do stars only have this, like, conscious phase of development? Do they have a lifespan and then they're dead? Are most of the stars we see out there dead, but a few of them are like these living beings? It just, I don't know. You could write some science fiction around this stuff, I guess. That's all I'm saying, right? There's some story possibilities there. What do you think?
It's life, Phil, but not as we know it, I don't know.
Exactly. Yes.
I think as we explore the galaxy around us, we're due for a lot of surprises. I don't know that this is going to be one of them. This is so crazy. I'm having trouble buying into it, I got to tell you. But I think we're due for some pretty big surprises. And, who knows? This is I'm not ready to rule it out 100%, but it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy.
It's not your same old stuff, that's for sure. And it's to the point where it sounds kind of new agey, and like it just sounds like
the Gaia hypothesis that the Earth is actually the conscious being, and
yeah.
we're just the fleas on the dog. Yeah, it sounds sort of akin to that, but you know,
it does.
I'm not ready to rule it out, though.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, we've got everything yet to learn about what's going on out in the universe. You know, whether the 234 stars that have been identified with these unique signatures, whether that's just an interesting factor, or, you know, an interesting feature of those stars that we have to learn better about the composition of stars to understand why they're like that, why they have those signatures, or something interesting is going on there, kind of like with the megastructure star where it looks like something is being built. You know, we're at this point where we're seeing just enough to pique our curiosity, just enough of the universe to make us think, could there be something else there? And everything we're seeing right now could all turn out to be nothing, right? But it's good that we're thinking along these lines. I think that we have to keep challenging our imagination. When we were talking about this on Wednesday, I said, you know, just one of the key jobs you and I have is to share possibilities. And I think that it's encouraging that we're taking evidence from the universe and we're exploring what it might possibly say, even if those possibilities are remote, even if they're, you know, kind of outlandish, even a little bit silly, because in the end, I'm sure that the universe will end up being even more outrageous than we can imagine, right? Just in ways we haven't imagined yet. And, you know,
I would just tell our new listeners that when Phil mentions the possible alien megastructure star, he's talking about Tabby's star. Google that. You can catch up real quick. Let me throw out a crazy prediction since we're in our week of craziness. I think, Phil, that we're in the final years of thinking that we might be alone. Let me just throw out a crazy prediction. We are in the last decade of thinking that we might be alone.
So within a decade, we'll know for sure, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's somebody else out there.
And the only way we know for sure is we find somebody, because you can never know for sure that you're alone, right? You know, and until you explore every corner of the universe, you never know for sure if you're alone. But I think that we will know for sure that we're not alone within a decade.
I think that's true. I would tend to agree. I think the one caveat I would put on that, the one word of caution I would say is what we might know in 10 years is that we haven't always been alone, right? We might find someone way out there, something, you know, so far out that it's like, well, they were there then, but that's all we'd be able to say, you know, because we do, when we look at the universe, we look into the past. Or are you thinking they're going to show? Right, they're actually going to come here.
No, I don't necessarily think they're going to show up on our doorstep. I think that we will have unequivocal proof that they're out there, or were, if you're looking back in time, in the light spectrum. You know, you're. But I mean, I'm talking. In order to really know, you can't be like thousands of years in the past. Because it's thousands of light years away. I think that in order to really know, it's going to have to be within 200 or 300 light years. And
right.
That means it's only 200 or 300 years in the past, right? So, you know, that's
really, they can keep it together that long. Come on, people.
Yeah, that's right. You'd have to be pretty pessimistic to think that they're gone.
Right.
So, or optimistic, depending on your view of the existence of other civilizations.
How much you want to meet up with these aliens? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, but at any rate, it's. I think, though, that we will have some unequivocal proof for any people that are susceptible to unequivocal proof. There's still people that doubt that we went to the moon. So
sure.
I think that, 100 years, 100, 200, 300 years from now, there'll still be people doubting the existence of aliens until they actually, you know, shake hands with one. But I think most scientists will believe in 10 years that we are not alone, and that they have proof of that. So sufficient proof to say that we're not alone.
All right. Well, Stephen, I'm going to let your crazy prediction be the last word on our unexpected news stories and crazy, crazy questions. Cause I like it. I think that's, You know, it's a good solid projection. It's kind of like your one about life extension, right? It's timed, it's near term, and it's pretty specific, such as, you know, if you're wrong, hey, don't think 10 years from now, I won't be saying, well, didn't you say we were going to know for sure, right, or something like that.
Yeah. So as we approach the end of 2026, you know, you're going to call me on it. I know it. I just know it.
Or not. I'll say, oh, you were right. Yeah. And 3 years later, we knew for sure. So,
I'll tell you, yeah, absolutely. And
of course, if you're right, I'll never have to bring it up, will I? That's right.
That's right. Yeah, it's one of those things that if it turns out I'm right, it'll be such conventional wisdom. It'll be that, you know, everybody always believes.
No, I just meant that you'll constantly bring up the fact that you were.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The same is true of life extension. Called it.
That's right.
You know, I'm sort of happy I'm going to get to live a long time, but I'm really happy to be right.
that would be great. We should actually put a picture up on the World Transform site. You know, just you, your face next to these predictions. You know, life extension, nailed it. You know, alien life, nailed it, you know.
Called it.
Thought coming. You know.
Yeah. Self-driving stars, that's Phil.
Yeah. Never happened. Yeah, exactly. Oh, too much fun.
God.
Okay, so with that, let's slide over and do some other geek. I've got a good one. For those who have access to HBO, you don't have to have HBO anymore. You can. There's different ways to access HBO. This new series, Westworld. I'm sure you're familiar, Stephen, with the movie Westworld from the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. Yul Brynner. Who else was in that? Yeah.
Well, Yul Brynner is the person who comes to mind. I'm not sure that anybody else of big note was in there, but he plays this gunfighter robot who starts to kind of go off the reservation, to mix my metaphors just slightly. You know, things start to go crazy wrong there, and it's a little bit of a precursor to Jurassic Park, but the big difference is these robots are coming to life. They're starting to determine their own actions, kind of like these stars, you know, flying themselves around. These robots start making decisions about what they want to do, and those aren't necessarily the same decisions that the people who wrote the original entertainment programs want them to do. Well, that's what's going on in this series, and I'm about four episodes in. It takes a while to warm into it, but once you're in, it's got a lot of Battlestar Galactica feel to it in terms of the – you remember how the Cylons were kind of – you know, they were very human-like, but also very creepy, and that's what you get with these robots in this show. It's really interesting. You see the same storylines. You know, these robots, they live these lives where they're just repeating, you know, the same stories over and over. You see them going through the motions, and I think the way they handle on the show this idea that consciousness is emerging is really very interesting, because it seems to be kind of an evolutionary thing that's happening to the group. That somehow, you know, we talk about this idea of genes and also memes that spread civilization, that are tools of evolution. It seems like that's kind of what they're hinting at in this show, that ideas are getting into the heads of these robots and then they're sharing them with each other, and it's spurring their evolutionary development, which of course is kind of cool, but also totally terrifying if you're inside this park and you know, these,
robots. Let me just ask, because I have not seen the new Westworld at all, but the old Westworld was a robot park, a physical robot park.
Yeah.
The new Westworld is a virtual world, right? With virtual beings inside a virtual world that people can virtually visit, right? Or is it?
No, it's
for real.
It's a real place out in the West, and I mean they've got all kinds
this
of advanced technologies.
Okay, gotcha.
But they're in our substrate. One of my, you know, if you want to criticize the premise, there it is. You just laid it out. That's absurd, right? The future, if people want to do this, they don't have to build robots and do it in meat space. People will be doing this in full immersion VR long before it ever becomes possible and therefore feasible, I think, to do something like this. So,
not just possible, but also crazy, crazy expensive. If you can do it in virtual space, You can small fraction of what it would take to do it in the real world. Why do it at all in the real world? You know, and
right. Well, and, I mean, and, one of the interesting
and we're pretty
things going
we're
on
pretty close technologically to being able to do it virtually. We're within a few years of being able to do it virtually, whereas, you know, have convincing, you know, robots to be able to do it. I would say that's still a little ways off. So
I would think so too. I would think so too. You know, delivering a full immersion experience, which you would get in the meat space, right? There's no question. I mean, because you really are in an old West town. You know, you really are riding on a, it's a robot horse, but you really are riding on a horse. I mean, so the full sensory experience is going on. We've got a ways to go in VR technology before we're able to deliver that. But I would still think, yeah, we'll be able to deliver that before we're ever going to build anything like this park. I think that the park is absurd on the face of it. And that if they'd wanted to do something more, you know, quote unquote realistic, it might have been set, as you described, in a virtual world, because you could have the same issues, right? You could have these software-based robots coming to consciousness, you know, exploring their world. All the same stuff could be happening, but I think it would be more believable.
Yeah, and when these software intelligences, you know, get injured, they bleed. You know, they when you cut them, they bleed just like a human person. So, you know, that if a robot, you know, gets injured, then they see that they're a robot immediately. You know, it seems to me it would be hard to maintain the illusion in a real.
Well, these are very convincing robots, and unfortunately, in the, you know, 21st century version of Westworld, the mayhem is pretty bad. You know, when a robot gets its head blown off, and this happens a lot, it's a very convincing looking thing that happens. In fact, there's another problem with doing it as a real thing is they're constantly having to rebuild these robots because all these gunfights are going on and other terrible things are happening. They constantly are being dismembered and shot and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, behind the scenes, they have to put the robot back together so that it's ready for the next guest. Yeah, that part is pretty outrageous. But the idea that intelligence might occur in a population, sentience, consciousness might emerge kind of as a group phenomenon, I find that really interesting. And I, like I said, I've only seen 4 episodes, but I'm looking forward to, I hope that idea really gets developed in the later episodes. If so, I feel like that kind of saves the show, even though the premise is ridiculous. That's an interesting idea to explore. And so far, it's a pretty good show. Good cast. Anthony Hopkins and others are in there. I would definitely recommend it. If you get a chance, check out Westworld on HBO. All right. Stephen, have you got another geek topic for us?
I do. And this is sort of a weird thing. You know, we were talking about the possibility of stars having intelligence, and, you know, when is something intelligent, Phil? And let me just give you an example of possible simple intelligence, okay, in a place that you might not expect it, okay? What about a cooperative board game, okay? And this is about as simple as you can break it down, okay? A cooperative board game, Phil, is where you and I and another buddy or two play a game that is, and our job is, in the case of, say, pandemic, or, you know, fire rescue, you know, in fire rescue, you're supposed to save people from a burning building, and in pandemic, you're saving the world from multiple diseases that are trying to wipe out populations. In these games, you're all working together towards a goal, and the game is pushing back against you, okay? It's, you know, every time, every turn, you do all that you can do to make good things happen, and then, you know, your same turn or whatever. Okay, now let's see what the bad stuff is, and you might turn over 3 or 4 cards, or you might roll a die, or whatever, and then bad crap happens. You know, and oh my gosh, you know, and then the next person gets their turn and tries to do what they can do, and you're cooperating with each other and doing things. Well, my question is this a simple example of mechanical computing? You know, I mean, is, you know, because the game designer, if there's intelligence built into this, it's the game designer's intelligence, right? I mean, you're playing the game designer by proxy
right.
when you're doing that, because the game designer wants it to be a challenging experience. If it wasn't a challenge, there would be no, you know, high five moment at the end when you know this is the third or fourth time that our group has played it, and this is the first time we've won. Yay us! High five and all around the table. You wouldn't have that feeling if it were an easy thing to do. And so these cooperative games tend to be difficult. And so, you know, my thought, what does it take to be for something to have intelligence built into it? I mean, we've seen examples of mechanical computers,
right?
And so, is this something? This is obviously less than one of the difference engines or something like that by Babbage, obviously. But it's not completely. It's not sitting there as dead cardboard. There's there's some intelligence built into it, and it's the game designer's intelligence, obviously. But he's not sitting there across the table when it happens.
Right.
So, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think definitely there's intelligence encoded into the system.
Right.
When you think about when you read a book, right, a bunch of intelligence has been encoded into that, you know, artifact, and you work your way through it, and you actually follow a train of thought. What you got here is a more sophisticated path, right? It's not necessarily a more sophisticated train of thought, because books can be very dense and very complex, but it's a much more sophisticated path. It's an interactive path. And
the game itself is responding to something that I do, specifically. And so the game may change based on, the actions I take. And so
my analogy would be
where the book doesn't change. If I read the book, it's going to be the same words if you read it. But
I think that game designer ultimately has written an algorithm, okay, and you are like processing that algorithm on the operating system, which is that game, right? So I think that's the closest analogy I can come to. But I think that's kind of what's happening there. You might view the game as also processing the algorithm, but to me that's like firmware, right? It's built into that OS or the machine system that even underpins.
Think of the example of an old fashioned thermostat. I mean, not the computerized thermostats we have today, but the kind we grew up with, Phil. I mean, even that was not as totally dead, and unintelligent thing in a way. I mean, you fix it to where it turns on the air conditioning if the temperature drops below a certain point, and it does it. If, for example, it heats up and air conditioning needs to turn on, it does it regardless of what time of the day it is or whatever. If it gets too hot, the air conditioner comes on. But it's the simplest sort of intelligence there possibly can be. But perhaps sometimes because we're living in a world that's beginning to see artificial intelligence emerge, we sometimes forget how transformative some of the simplest forms of mechanical intelligence have been.
Yeah, I think there's probably an argument to be made that every technology ever developed has, in some sense, encoded some of our knowledge into it, right? Some information from us. There's an information play in every technology, even the crudest piece of technology. There's an information component to it, but some of them, they are very information driven. Even simple things like thermostat, I think that's a really good example. And I think a board game is a really good example of how information can be encoded into a system, and it's cooperative. You've got to go in and say, "Hey, I want to play this game. I want to follow these parameters and interact with them." But as long as you do, if that's the decision you've made to do that, then I think you're running a program there. It's like a very simple computing scenario that's taking place there. As is, as you point out, even changing the temperature on a traditional thermostat. Yeah, we've been embedding knowledge all this time in so many things, and not only knowledge but actually intelligence. into
well,
the
I mean,
into
if for
create.
Example, I have a you know, like an ancient technology, like a, you know, like a weapon, that's knowledge embedded into that. Okay.
Yep.
But intelligence is actually embedded in something like a thermostat because it reacts, you know,
right,
on its own. It reacts and does a certain thing. It's the simplest possible thing, on or off. It's a binary thing, but it's there's some intelligence built into something like that. And so
yeah, there's response in there. And you see,
yeah.
And what you see through engineering over time is this move towards more knowledge and then more actual intelligence being embedded into everything we do. Obviously, once computers came along, it became a lot easier to embed intelligence into everyday objects, but that's not the only way things are embedded. An electronic chip isn't the only way we embed intelligence, it turns out.
Yeah. All right. I just thought I'd bring that up. That's it's something an idea I've been kind of pulling.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit on me, Stephen. Say again.
I was just, you know, it's a thought I've been having for a while. What is the simplest way to embed intelligence into a system? And these are some examples that I've been playing with. So, yeah, thanks for letting me air that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Stephen, that was a good topic, but that was not Other Geek. I think, you know, that's a week of shows. Let's keep working on that one, I think. That one has got legs, for sure. All right. Well, hey, it was fun talking to you about this. Answering crazy questions all week. We're going to be back again next week with three brand new shows. Look forward to being with you all then, and until next time, live to see it.